Welcome into SBC This Week. I'm Brandon Porter. Laura Erlandson is with me. Laura, we have been on the move the last couple of weeks.
We have, here, there, and everywhere. Yeah,
absolutely. We're going to hear about some of those trips today, a trip to Orlando where there were CP leaders gathered and convention advancement folks gathered. And so some encouraging news coming from that a little bit later. We'll share that with you here in the podcast. But this week, Laura, we've been really wearing our journalism hats. Mm-hmm. And you've been over at the Baptist Communicators Association in Richmond at IMD.
Yes, which was very cool. It was very, it was neat to go to BCA, of course, mm-hmm. Baptist Communicators Association Conference. But the fact that it was held at IMB was even cooler. Mm-hmm. So we got to be in the IMB building and kind of spending some time there with a lot of the staff at IMB mm-hmm. in various capacities, and a lot, of course, all of our fellow Baptist journalists. And it was really helpful. I was so thankful to be there. I'm always amazed by the quality of journalists that we have mm-hmm. and designers and photographers and videographers and any kind of communications expert you can imagine. We have the best in the SBC. We really do. And so just to be reminded of that again and to see old friends. And I got the chance to tell several of them how much they saved my life on a regular basis, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have anything to put in BP or anything to talk about on this podcast. And so yeah, it was a great time. I was very happy to go, and I'm also glad to be home because I'm tired. But
yeah, absolutely. Now, I had the opportunity to represent us at the Evangelical Press Association. It met just up the road in Lexington, Kentucky. And so that was a little bit of a broader range of writers and creators, designers, all those same things that you said, just from a broader perspective in the evangelical world. So mm-hmm. Very neat to see how the Lord is at work and utilizing those folks and their
Are
work.
Are we allowed to say that we won some awards at both of these conferences?
Sure.
I mean, it's kind of pretty cool.
I think you just did.
I just did. At BCA, we won some awards for some stories that we submitted. And then at EAP, and also Brandon got first place for his Good News for Today podcast. Congratulations, Brandon, at BCA.
Thank you.
And at EPA, we won a couple of awards for single stories that we submitted, and we won the Denominational Coverage Award mm-hmm. for digital publications, which is a huge deal. And we are very, very thankful to have won that and very humbled. It's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So very grateful for the opportunity to serve folks. And it's always encouraging to get a pat on the back there. Well, Laura, talking about just great leadership. You mentioned that a moment ago with so many folks in the BCA and just the work that is accomplished there. It brought to mind this first story, which is, obituaries are difficult stories because obviously they're a mix of grief and sorrow, but also with joy. And so we start out this podcast with this story of longtime International Mission Board leader Clyde Metter died earlier Friday, April 26th. He was 79 years old. And I tell you, Clyde Metter has been hailed in just a wide array of circles, mm-hmm. just as someone who loved the Lord, who loved the Great Commission, who loved the church, and was so faithful to the work of the IMB and the SBC for so many years.
Yeah, it was interesting. A lot of the things that I read in his obit as I was getting ready to post it, I already knew, but just to be reminded of several IMB presidents over the past couple of decades have specifically wanted him on their leadership team. I mean, even as much as pulling him out of retirement to say, you got to come and help us. That's pretty rare, that to show that kind of just being so invaluable to an organization and such mm-hmm. a heart for leadership but a servant's heart at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then the story talked about his 14 years on the mission field in Indonesia and how they were forced to leave. They weren't able to renew their visa, and how it was just crushing to him and his wife. But the Lord had other plans, and they were able to just kind of pivot and become such a integral part of what the IMB has been in the past 20 years. And, so it was just really powerful story, really neat to remember and be reminded of his example.
Yeah, absolutely. So we would encourage you to pray for the Metter family as they grieve and celebrate at the same time, and the same for the IMB family as well. Mm-hmm. So go check out that story. You will be.
When I was at IMB, I'm just going to tell real quick, one of the things we got to do was attend chapel on Wednesday with all the IMB staff. when we were there for our conference, and they played a video that featured Clyde Metter, but they had planned to play that video long before they knew that he was approaching his death. Mm. And so it was just really sweet. And I love when the Lord does things like that. Like yeah. he just kind of sovereignly plans these little things for us to appreciate. And so it was a video of him explaining one of the murals there at IMB and what it means. Mm. So it was, we all got to watch that video of him. And of course, by then, a lot of people knew that he was nearing the end of his life. And so it was just made it all that much more special.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Very neat. Very neat. Well, we want to turn our focus now. Some things happening in the annual meeting world as we prepare. We're just, Laura, we are, what, 8 weeks away, something like that, 10
Don't
weeks
remind
away.
Me. Yeah.
of annual meeting is coming soon. Now, folks, when Laura Erlandson says that, it's not because she's dreading annual meeting.
No, it's just I have so much to do.
It's because there's a lot going on in preparation.
No, I love the annual meeting. In fact, I told somebody at VCA, I was like, oh man, I'm excited about India. I love the annual meeting. Yep. It's so cool. And he goes, you're in the right job. Yeah, I am in the right job.
But you know, it really is. I was talking to some of our EC staff this week who are just involved in the intricate details of things that you receive, like the book of reports and the daily bulletin and all of that signage and the exhibits and all of those things. And it really is coming together. So it's just so encouraging to talk to those folks. They're just so great at what they do, and they love serving Southern Baptist and helping that experience to be as
same. I've been talking to people about writing preview stories and stuff about different writers that we work with, and they're all like so happy to help and happy to do it and so professional and gonna turn in these stories on time and ready to go. And I'm always like so thankful that we get to work with such great people.
Yeah. Well, hopefully most of them will be on time. I may know of one that may not be quite on time. So anyway, but if everybody else is good, then that'll be okay.
Yes.
All right. So the cooperation group, they are set to release their recommendations May the 1st. They made an announcement on their website, which is coopgroupupdates.com. Jared Wellman, who is the chair of that committee, told Baptist Press and then also in that announcement that they plan to let folks know well in advance of the annual meeting of the recommendations that they are intending to bring. So be watching for that in just a few days. The Committee on Nominations, Laura. So as we record this on Friday, April the 26th, we have two stories coming out today that will be available to folks. One is on the Committee on Nominations and the other is the Committee on Committees. The Committee on Nominations, chaired by Matt Capps, who's pastor at Fairview Baptist Church in Apex, North Carolina. And then the Committee on Committees will be chaired by Adam Blosser, who's the pastor at Goshen Baptist in Spotsylvania. That's a fun word, Spotsylvania.
That is fun.
Virginia. And so a full list of the folks who will be on those committees and brought forward for nominating at the annual meeting, you can find that at Baptist Press in those stories. All right. So Laura mentioned earlier about some CP-related travel that happened just, it was actually last week, but just here's the story on it. And so folks who are responsible for CP education, CP promotion across the convention and their state conventions and regions got together down in Orlando to encourage each other, to compare notes and strategies, trying to get the word out and raise awareness about the cooperative program.
Yeah. And that's the meeting that you got to go to week in Orlando.
That's right.
And so we had, I don't know how many people there, but from all the different state conventions were represented.
About 40.
Yeah. 40. So that's pretty cool. And they gathered, it was like a training event for one thing, to kind of train and how better to promote the cooperative program, but also to get ready for next year when the cooperative program turns 100. Mm-hmm. And so there's some planning going on already for that. Brandon, you have been intimately involved in all
working
of that,
planning.
I know.
Yeah,
and then I love the story that we had this week too. Speaking of the cooperative program, from David Roach, one of our freelancers and a pastor down in Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah,
talking about he interviewed several different churches and talking about how they promote CP, and so of course the state leaders have their role to play, but ultimately it comes down to each and every church. How do you get people engaged with the cooperative program? So a really interesting story, from David, starting out talking about a church, First Baptist Bettendorf, Iowa, that gives a huge percentage of their budget to the cooperative program, and then talking about other churches, how they do it. But all of them basically said that it's not, you can't promote the cooperative program because if people, most people aren't going to even know what that is. And if they do know what it is, they're going to be like, eh, well, it's a program. What is, why do I want to be generous toward that? But if you promote it as the Great Commission, that's where it's at. And so it was just an interesting, and of course it's something that maybe we already knew, but it was neat to read it. One of the pastors, Chris Morgan of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Highland, California, he said, church members are going to give because they believe in the kingdom of God. They're going to give because we are united in Christ together and we participate together in the mission of God and because they believe in the Great Commission.
Yeah. Very, very encouraging. One of the things that Michael Cabell said at that retreat in Orlando was when they talked to churches in Kentucky about the cooperative program, he said, we start by talking about cooperation. And we really want them to understand about cooperation. And then we talk about the program. And so, you know, I definitely get that and understand that and how it is a partnership. It's partnership missions. And so that was a great time to be together with them. Enjoyed David's story as well. And then Laura Charles Grant, who was there in Orlando, he also had another event that happened the same sort of a second night and the next day that brought convention advancement partners together as they began to talk about raising up CP awareness in Hispanic, Asian, and African American churches.
Yeah, I liked what Jeff Orge, the incoming SBC Executive Committee President, he said, the cooperative program, I like what he told them. He said, it's not a financial program hatched by someone to get more money from churches. Instead, it's the fulfillment of a dream of collaboration, of coming together to do more together than we can do individually.
Yeah.
And it was harkened back to the story that David wrote, that's how churches want to promote the cooperative program, is not to just give more money to some organization, but to partner together for the Great Commission. And then also for those leaders, those ethnic group leaders, to be aware of the kind of resources that are available to them too, even in other languages, videos, brochures, things for their churches too that they may not have been aware of. So that was a good outcome of that meeting as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we all have a role to play. And very, very helpful reminder there of those stories that we've had this last week on the cooperative program. Speaking of we all have a role to play, this next story, Laura, I really loved this story specifically. So Steve Gaines spoke at an Awakening National Prayer Conference with a host of other speakers who are all, you know, well-known Southern Baptists, and just the Lord's used all of them in fantastic ways. First, excited that Steve Gaines spoke, but just because of the health challenges he's faced.
Yeah, that he was able to do that was pretty exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, it was down at Southwestern Seminary, and so he was able to make the trip from Memphis down there to preach and speak. But we're not going to tell you the story here. You're going to have to go read it for yourself at Baptist Press.
It's pretty powerful.
But he talked about this unknown prayer warrior who prayed for his mother while she was in the hospital dealing with serious cancer diagnosis herself many years ago, and actually led her to the Lord. And Steve Gaines doesn't know her name. And he talks about how he looks forward to meeting her one day in heaven. And that's, I've still, even with that, I haven't given you the whole story. And so you should go.
You got to read it.
Read that. It's really, really powerful. And so a great event down at Southwestern called the Awakening National Prayer Conference. Lots of folks preach there. And just a powerful story about how God works through the prayers of his people in that story as well. And then, Laura, these next two stories, one's connected to IMB and the other to NAM, both were very encouraging this week as people, I guess the theme of this podcast really is we're stronger together.
Yeah, it really has become like a cooperation, not intentionally, but it just sort of happened that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about this, this Global Senders Summit, or let me think, is that what it's called? It was called the Global Senders Forum at IMB.
Yeah. So it was the first of its kind. more than 300 participants representing 76 countries met in Asia for the very first Global Senders Forum. This was in the middle of April. The IMB hosted the event, but shared leadership responsibilities with other Baptist and like-minded sending organizations from Brazil, South Korea, Taiwan, and joined representatives from other countries. So there were groups from there from those three countries, and then individuals from a host of other countries, up 76, like I said. Mm-hmm. National Baptist leaders, heads of conventions, seminary presidents, agency directors, of course, IMB missionaries were there. They gathered to explore how they can work together to affect lostness in the world. Mm. And Paul Chitwood said, "This is a historic first for us. Never in our 179-year history have we convened a meeting of leaders representing more than one-third of the countries on the planet to impact lostness together." Amanda Davis, who is the director of globalization at IMB, said that the IMB has dreamed of having an event like this. Mm. And they were going to have one in 2020. And of course, we know what happened. They weren't able to have it. And so this was the first time they've been able to do it. And it's pretty exciting. The first of its kind of not just an IMB missionaries meeting together, but other Baptist organizations, other like-minded Christian organizations saying, once again, how can we cooperate? How can we work together to accomplish this task, because we can't do it by ourselves. And then in NAM, also this week, we saw a huge class of new church planters, more than 200 attending the orientation there at NAM to plant churches, representing 189 sending churches. And so once again, 24 U.S. states and two Canadian provinces represented there. And who knows what the fruit of that will be NAM helps send out those 200 church planters to plant churches all over North America.
Yeah.
And it's some really encouraging, exciting, kind of mind-blowing numbers to me too. Yeah. Like 300 people at that IMB meeting and 200 church planters at the NAM meeting. Like that's a lot.
It is. That's
guys,
fantastic.
We need to give to the cooperative program so we can support these efforts.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The event at NAM, they had a sending lab, which they called a collaborative workshop for pastors of established churches that helps them develop a vision and plan to send church planters from their congregations. And so I just was so encouraged by that, of churches planting churches and NAM coming along through this sending lab to help them and think through and create strategies and just move forward in that mission. So,
and IMB's been very intentional about that too. The last couple of years, you might've heard of the Church Connect program that they've been doing. They talked about that a little bit. In fact, at BCA this week, they talked about one of the IMB sessions that I was in. They talked about connecting with churches. And you're right. I think it's more effective. I think you can get more prayer partners. You can get more generous givers when you allow the churches to be the instigators of this, that we're here to facilitate, we're here to help you, but ultimately it's the churches that are doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, let's turn our focus to Washington, D.C., Laura, and some public policy issues. There's been a lot going on, and Southern Baptists have had quite a bit to do with that. The first, President Biden signed a foreign aid package for Ukraine and Israel with relief for Gaza included in that. Obviously, if you've watched the world news around us, House Speaker Mike Johnson, who is a Southern Baptist, has just played a key role in moving that through the House. And and even, you know, to some degree, I think his voice really lent momentum into the Senate and as it moved forward there to the president's desk. And so we heard from Brent Leatherwood a couple of times this last week in regards to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's hard to know, but it feels like Southern Baptist had a little bit of a role in getting the message through to Speaker Johnson and then all the way through to the House and ultimately the Senate to get this aid passed. Brent Leatherwood told Baptist Press, "Our nation has long supported those combating oppression and terrorism, and the horrors we have seen across the globe demand a response." Mm. And so that appears to be happening.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We've had a couple of things in the world of college, high school sports, and transgenderism. Here's a story, Laura, on Title IX and regulations that folks at the ERLC will turn back the clock on women's sports instead of helping to move it forward, which is probably what they intend. But when it pushes against biblical values, it's just not going to go the right way.
Yeah, Title IX was designed to protect women and women's sports. But if you allow biological males to compete, then ultimately you're not protecting women. You're not giving them a fair shot in their sport. And so we have a really good story this week in Baptist Press about new proposed new Title IX regulations that would be disastrous for women's sports.
Yeah,
we have a story even today in Baptist Press from Scott Barkley about a specific high school in West Virginia where they're dealing with this in an actual specific case. One of the girls on the high school track and field team is a Southern Baptist, and her church released a statement to Baptist Press about this. It's, I mean, it's current. This is really happening. This is not theoretical. This is not, this is really happening in real schools around the country, and churches are going to have to be thinking about this as their own students are having to, you know, maybe girls in their own youth group are having to deal with this at their school. And so we've had some really great coverage this week from Scott Barkley and Diana Chandler about this issue, and I'm and look for more of it in the coming days, I'm sure.
Yeah, it really is. We see when the issue of abortion and pro-life issues, we also see this, the Title IX and the transgenderism and the and athletics and things like that. It really is hitting home. It's not just happening in Washington, D.C. It's happening in school boards, in state legislatures. It's happening very close to home.
Yeah, so. Diana's had a couple of stories this week about abortion in the states in various laws, because that's where the battle is now with abortion. It's in the states.
Yeah.
So she had a great story out of Idaho in the Supreme Court, and we will continue to follow. It just means more work for us to try to follow now 50 different strategies in the 50 different states regarding abortion, but we're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know the folks at the ERLC have been trying to do that. They've been trying to engage
come
alongside with our state convention partners and help them in that. And so they posted an event. They held a webinar on Monday, April the 22nd, that focused on Christian political engagement. I think, Laura, I think we can run a risk of sort of get swept up in this presidential election cycle to think that that's all that we can talk about, because that's all the news networks seem to want to talk about is the presidential election. But there are a lot of other issues that like we've talked about, it's a really important time for them. And so Brent Leatherwood from the ERLC and Dan Darling, who leads the Land Center for Cultural Engagement at Southwestern Seminary, they had a dialogue, and you can watch that video or read the story at Baptist Press. And it was helpful just to help us in thinking through how to engage on these issues.
Yeah, I love what Dan Darling said, that it's really basic, but it's the easiest thing to forget to do. And that is to just simply pray for our government officials. We're commanded to do it. Nowhere in scripture are we even commanded to vote, but we are commanded to pray for those in authority over us. And so he said that he even admitted that's something I have to remind myself to do. Am I praying for our leaders as often as I am complaining about them or posting about them? And that was pretty convicting. And he said, Paul urges Timothy to pray for everyone in authority. And remember, they were praying for Nero, who would send Paul to his death.
Yeah.
So if Paul can pray for Nero, we can pray for our leaders. So I liked that. That was good for me to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We had a story this week, Laura, as well on sports gambling. And just its wide-ranging effects. You just see it everywhere, you know, between online platforms and apps. And it just, I was watching America's team, the Atlanta Braves.
Oh, yeah.
And it grieved my heart that they have a casino, like it's on the field, like it's printed on the field, you know, as one of their sponsors. And so the story talks about just about the detrimental effects of gambling on the family, on an individual, on a community. And so I want to encourage folks to go and to read that. On one hand, when I read it, I thought, you know, this is not anything that most folks won't already know, but I think it's something that we need to continually be reminded of, and we need to be sharing it with others, because gambling is being normalized into the sports culture like never before.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something the story does say, that there has been an alarming rise in calls to gambling hotlines, especially among younger people, like men in their 20s and 30s. And so it might appear harmless, but it isn't. It's destroying lives. And I would also encourage people to go read that story. There's some statistics in there and some facts that maybe people didn't know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, Laura, we kind of come down to the end here. And I tell you what, folks, you all need to be careful when you see Laura Erlandson out, because if you pump her head up too much about these history moments, then she's just going to run off and turn into a Southern Baptist historian on us, I think, because she enjoys it. And you apparently enjoy it, because we are hearing from you. And she has a very good one today.
Yeah, I do. I could have been an archivist in another life, I think. In fact, one of the things I kept wanting to do when I was at the IMB building last week, every day, earlier this week, I should say, they have a really great library there. And I kept walking past it, and I was always on my way to somewhere else, and I couldn't just duck into the library and spend 2 or 3 hours, even though that's what I wanted.
Calling your name.
Laura. That's what I wanted to do, but I couldn't.
Take and read.
So today, this is a dispatch from April 28th. 1961.
Okay.
1961 in Baptist Press.
Okay.
It is the appearance of Dr. Martin Luther King as a lecturer at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky.
Wow.
King came to Louisville as one of several ministers and laymen invited on different dates to deliver the Gay Lecture Series at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. The lectureships are privately owned and do not involve cooperative program funds, according to a report from the seminary. The purpose was to present several types of controversial problems so seminary students, who will serve later as pastors and other church staff leaders, would be familiar with issues they faced. That's what a seminary professor told Baptist Press at the time. Mm-hmm. King appeared before a chapel service of 1,400 people. A newspaper reporter estimated it to be the largest turnout since evangelist Billy Graham had been at the seminary prior to that.
Wow.
Later in the day, King was to take part with a class in a question and answer session, and it was evident that the large classroom could not accommodate the overflow crowd, and so 500 students went to the chapel. And after he spoke, the students gave King what some said was an unprecedented standing applause.
Wow.
And so that's our dispatch from 1961 in Southern Baptist Life, this week in 1961. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. We were talking earlier before we started recording, wondering about that lecture series, and it is still happening.
Yeah. I was thinking I had heard of it before, the Gay Lecture Series. Yeah. I think it is. So that's a longstanding series, and none other than Martin Luther King was once one of the presenters. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew that he had spoken at Southern, but I guess I didn't know the context of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's called the J.B. Gay Lectures. Thomas Kidd was the most recent speaker, and he spoke.
I remember reading the story about that. Yep. I forgot that's what it was. Yeah. Okay.
Spoke about Thomas Jefferson and his Bible. So long history there of dealing with policy issues and things where faith and culture collide. So yeah, very neat.
Well, that was my fun story find for this week.
Yeah. It's a big one. Very big. Well, we appreciate you listening. Thanks so much for so many of you tuning in week after week. Know that we don't take it for granted, and enjoy spending some time with you, and hope this is a help to you.
Yeah, I had a couple of people come up to me even at BCA this week and thank us for taking over in a pinch when Jonathan and Amy had to step aside temporarily, and thank us for kind of keeping the podcast going. And so I just turned around to thank them. And I said, well, we wouldn't have anything to talk about if it wasn't for you generating content. And so, and for people listening. So yeah, we always have way more content than we have time for on the podcast. So just like I do every time, I would urge you to go check it out at baptistpress.com. And sincerely, thank you for listening.